Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
Yesterday on In Depth, we discussed the fact that the citizens of Pleasantville are facing the possibility of a 13% increase in their water bill every year for the next 5 years for the city to be in compliance with EPA water quality standards. We learned why this is happening, what the process of compliance is, and what the alternatives are. Today, we learn about the science behind why the changes to the Pleasantville wastewater system are needed. Let's go in depth with Lori McDaniel with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. So, Lori, what do you do with the DNR?
I'm a supervisor for the Water Resources section, which is part of our Water Quality Bureau. My section is responsible for the program areas of floodplain management, dam safety, and water quality standards and wastelet allocations.
Well, it sounds like you get out into our beautiful, natural Iowa landscape a lot and get to see what's happening out there.
I do. We have public meetings all over the state, and it's good to be able to get out and talk to people and hear what they're saying.
Well, you know that one of the things that we're having to deal with here in Marion County is the city of Pleasantville has some water issues that they're looking at potentially a 13% increase in their water bills over the next 5 years, and that's at the result of the Clean Water Act, and that the EPA and the DNR are trying to work that, they're trying to work that situation and correct it. And I'm just wondering why this is happening. What are the water standards, and is the difference meaningful?
Sure. I can explain a little bit about that. Just to start out, the water that we use every day when we either take a shower, do the dishes, flush the toilet, goes through a wastewater treatment plant, and then it's returned to our river or stream. And in Iowa, we have actually over 26,000 miles of streams and rivers that flow year-round. The problem that we're trying to solve is that we want to make sure that the water that we're using every day is returned to our rivers and streams in a condition that is protective of our aquatic life communities and is, more importantly, safe for our people who are recreating in and on the water. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources has been delegated the authority through the Environmental Protection Agency to carry out the requirements of the Federal Clean Water Act. And one part of the Clean Water Act is water quality standards. The standards are the goals that we set for our waters. It's what we expect our water to achieve in terms of maintaining the chemical, physical, and biological integrity. We want to make sure it provides, the water quality provides for the protection and propagation of fish, shellfish, wildlife, and the recreation in the water.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Lori McDaniel with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources about why the changes to the Pleasantville wastewater system are needed.
And are you familiar with the Pleasantville situation?
I'm not as familiar, but I could explain a little bit more about how water quality standards are set and how we develop them and a little bit about how they're used.
That'd be great.
Okay. Iowa's water quality standards have three components. The first step is designating the use of the water. The second step is setting the criteria that protects that use. And then the third step is preventing further degradation of the water. So when we're designating a use, we're looking at what types of aquatic life communities may live in that water and what types of recreational uses may occur in that water. We can do field studies where we actually go out and we determine the types of fish that we're finding. We're interviewing people to see how they use the water, and then we analyze that data, bring it back, and make determinations on which designated use does this particular river or stream fall into. Once we've made an initial analysis, we send letters to any of the wastewater treatment facilities that it may affect. We also send letters to adjacent landowners, and we ask for their feedback. Is there any other information that they can provide to us that could add to this analysis? And then as the final step, it goes through the state rulemaking process, and in that process we have public meetings all across the state and public hearings as well. When we were first starting to designate our waters back in 2007, in our first batch, we received over 2,000 comments, and we read every comment, we analyzed every comment, and we responded to every comment so that we could ensure that we were making the right decisions in designating the use of the water. The second step is setting the criteria to protect that use. And so that's where we have different criteria based on the different designated uses. For example, when we're looking at aquatic communities, too much ammonia may be harmful to fish and their habitat. When we study how ammonia affects an aquatic community, we look at the short-term and long-term effects. And if there's excess ammonia, it can accumulate in the organism over time. Or if there's a different type of pollutant, it could be toxic to an aquatic species immediately. So we're looking at long-term and short-term effects of whatever the pollutant that we're talking about might be. And when we're looking at the aquatic community, we're looking for the most sensitive species. And that species may be a tiny little critter. There's one called the Ceridaphnia that is usually the most sensitive species, and it's a food source for other fish. So we need to make sure that the food sources and the community and the habitat are all balanced within that ecosystem.
Well, now one of the... Go ahead.
I was just going to move into recreational uses, and that's where we look at the criteria that protects us when we're swimming and have the possibility of ingesting the water. And mostly we're looking at pathogens. E. coli bacteria is one of our indicators that we look for and is one of the criteria that has been developed for us to make sure that when people go swimming or have full body contact with the water or participate in other shoreline activities, they're protected as well so they don't get sick.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation with Lori McDaniel with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources about why the changes to the Pleasantville wastewater system are needed.
Well, let's go back to the ammonia for a little bit, because that's one of the problems that's been identified with Pleasantville's outflow from their system. Can you put that in real-world terms? Is the difference, well, 7, 8, 10 years ago, whatever, Pleasantville's water system was fine, as determined by the DNR, the EPA. Then all of a sudden we learned that, oh, no, we're getting too much ammonia in there. Can you put it in real-world terms? I mean, how is it going to impact the fish? Is it going to impact the number of the fish, the diversity of the fish? You said it hits one species particularly hard. Have you done studies on that?
Actually, in terms of ammonia, I don't have information on one particular species, but I can tell you that ammonia levels and the criteria have become more stringent. And the main reason behind that is to ensure the as you said, the diversity of the aquatic life community, ensuring that the habitat, the plants, the plant life thrives, and that we don't lose any of our native species. Ammonia can build up inside an organism, like a fish species, over a long period of time, and also affect the health and balance of that system.
Okay, and so these standards have been determined that after a particular point that apparently Pleasantville has exceeded, there is significant damage to the ecosystem.
Our water quality standards, one thing to remember is that our water quality standards are the goals that we're setting for water. These are the standards that we want our waters to reach, and we do the best we can to provide facilities information on how to meet those limits. And then it's the facility's decision to choose what's the best type of treatment system for their facility, what works best in their community.
Okay. But the science says is that this will be better downstream. The difference between the old standard and the new standard is significant enough for the people of Pleasantville and the people across all of America, I guess, that they invest millions of dollars into new infrastructure. Billions, maybe, across the country.
In Iowa, when we determine our criteria and then we apply it to a facility, we do look at the whole route of flow of the stream segment. So, for example, if a facility first discharges into a very small segment, which then discharges into a larger river, we have to make sure that that water that's flowing from the small stream segment all the way through the river is protected, and all of those downstream uses are protected. The ammonia standards and the E. coli standards for disinfection, they've been in place now for several years. One of the things that happened in 2005 was that we worked with the EPA and we had what was called the rebuttable presumption. That meant that every stream segment in Iowa that did not already have an assigned designated use was automatically assigned the most conservative, the most stringent level of protection. When we came back through and did the field studies, our job was to determine, is that appropriate? Is that the appropriate designation? Or is there a designation that has less stringent criteria associated with it that is more applicable to that particular stream segment? The other thing that happened was that before a facility can renew their NPDES discharge permit, we have to make sure DNR is responsible for making sure that a field study has been done in that particular stream segment. And all of those have to go through rulemaking. And they've been going through rulemaking in batches since 2007. So this has been occurring all across the state, where facilities may need to upgrade, may need to look at disinfection for their facilities to ensure that they can meet the criteria to make sure that the people are safe and the aquatic life community is safe from harm.
Now, I'm just going to assert that it sort of seems that these rules come down from somebody in Washington that maybe has never even been in Iowa or never even waded a stream, and they're just some kind of an arbitrary decision, and then they impose it on the states. And I guess that's sort of the image, that we don't get a lot of information on why this particular standard is important. And when we're in this situation where it looks like to me, I'm not doing the math right here, but it looks like to me that the city of Pleasantville, residents of that city, might expect their water bills to at least double as a result of this over the next 5 years. I think that they would like to know that this is a significant difference, that doubling of the cost to bring in the infrastructure that they need is going to make a real difference. Is it?
I believe it's going to make a real difference. The goals that we have set for our waters are except for Iowa's waters. That's one of the reasons why we have delegated authority over the Clean Water Act that has been given to us from EPA, so that Iowa has the flexibility to set standards that work with Iowa's landscape and natural background. We're not Wyoming. We're not Texas. We're Iowa. We have different different fish species. We recreate in the water differently. And so one of the flexibilities we have is making sure that we do the research to understand what might be toxic or harmful to the people here in Iowa or to the aquatic life community. One example I can give is when we were developing our chloride standard, and chloride can be toxic to aquatic life. And in Iowa specifically, we have a wide range of naturally occurring hardness values already in the streams. We were able to work with EPA and do some research, and what we found was that as the hardness increased, the toxicity of chloride decreased. In other words, the harder the water, the less toxic chloride is. So that gave us the ability to be very specific and site-specific with our criteria when we work with different facilities, just even across the state. In one place, you might have a water hardness of 600, and another part, you might have 200. And so we can tailor a criteria specifically for that water body, specifically for that facility, so that it does make a real difference. And that's the flexibility we have when we're delegated the authority for the Clean Water Act. We have the ability to make Iowans making decisions for Iowa, and having that way to be specific and make sure that we're implementing practical, realistic criteria and standards for Iowa's waters.
Thanks to Lori McDaniel for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.